everybody. Welcome to Hobbs and Friends. As always, I am your host, Jason Hobbs, and I have another awesome guest with me today. So I kind of thought most of my listeners wouldn't be aware of who my guest is, but I did some hyping on our Discord channel and they were all like, oh, this is great. And they had all these ideas and stuff. And I was like, whoa, this is awesome. So without further ado, one of the hosts of WebDM and according to N-World, one of the best top five D&D YouTubers, Jim Davis. How's it going, man?
Wow. That's great. That's actually news to me. I didn't know that we'd made an N-World article or anything like that. I'm going to have to like go hunting around for that, I think.
So I always joke that I'd never do any research, but I was like, well, I don't really know this guy that well, so maybe I should look him up. And that's what popped up. I mean, I didn't read the article. That's just the headline.
All right. I'll accept it. That's fine. Headline's good enough for me.
Sounds fantastic to me, man. There's a lot of dudes doing YouTube D&D stuff.
Oh, my God. Aren't there, though? Like, man, I feel for him. I really do. Guys out there, you have my full support. Like, my heart's there with you because we started in this weird moment where there wasn't a lot of people out there. Like the Colville had already started, and then some of the other channels out there, Nerdarchy, Dawnforge Cast, they were already had established their audiences, and we were like just little guys in the field. And then we looked up and was like, holy shit, like something that we're saying is resonating with people. And it really took us off kind of off guard. And then after that, it felt like a rocket ship. So I still have a bit of acceptance on my part to be like, yeah, I might still see myself as this like hobbyist that, you know, what I think or say doesn't really, you know, nobody gives a shit about, to, I don't know, maybe somebody likes what we're saying, you know. And it's there's something about when Pruitt and I sit down and talk about a subject, and there's no matter how many times we sit down before a camera rolls and talk through a subject and go like, here are the beats we kind of want to hit, or this is the kind of, you know, theme of the show or something. There's something that happens when we start talking and the camera rolls and we're there that comes out that we have no idea about, much in the same way that when you sit down and play a fucking game of Dungeons and Dragons, something happens that you didn't plan for, you know. There's a magic that happens in it. So I don't know, that's I could go on and on about it, but yeah, nice. That's where I'm at.
That's great, man. Magic is kind of like luck. There's good and bad, right?
No. Yeah. Oh yes, there are lost episodes of WebDM that you guys hopefully will never see, because they are not good.
All right. So yeah, I'm glad you said WebDM again, because I think that we should, you know, emphasize that point that you have an awesome vlog, and it's called WebDM. So that's a pretty clever name. My wife was impressed.
That's Jonathan Pruitt's idea. So I'm terrible with dates. I have a master's in history and I am just utter crap with dates. Somewhere around 2015 or maybe late 2014, you know, Pruitt comes up and says, we should do this show called WebDM because people will always type in WebMD. And if we just have it one letter off, they'll find us by accident. And, you know, maybe they'll like what we have to say. And we had a friend, Travis, who's our producer, runs all the, you know, video and edits it and all that stuff. You might hear my cat in the background. I apologize. She's quite loud and insistent.
My cat.
Maybe they can talk to each other. You know, he'd been in video production for as long as I'd known him, and we've known each other since we were 15. So he'd made several short films and had tried to get a YouTube channel start off the ground before. You can see all that on his own Travis T-Bowles video, I think is his personal YouTube channel. You can see me wield a lightsaber against Pruitt in one of those videos, a real lightsaber with special effects by a Lucasfilm you know, special effects artist or guy. Anyway, I don't know much about the details. So we started up this YouTube channel, and it was conceived in like my kitchen, you know, around New Year's one time. And by early spring, we were filming in Travis and Pruitt's apartment. That's the you know, the first few episodes where we're like in front of a fireplace and we were just like brought all of our nerd shit out. We're just like, there's like Lego minifigs that are on there that are mine, and a whole bunch of miniatures and books and like a Thanos gauntlet and everything. And we didn't really know what we were going to talk about. Travis, you know, was like, hey, just chat about Dungeons and Dragons. Fifth edition had just come out, and we just ran our mouths off about what we thought about fifth edition, not having barely read the player's handbook, and got called out on it like immediately. And, you know, and it was a fun moment, but, you know, it was a hobby. And I think it flowed like a hobby for a while until we, like I said, we looked up and we realized that we could make money off of this and that we were already making money off of it. And that it was enough to like turn it from a hobby into a business. And so that took like 3 or 4 years, but that's where we're at now at the beginning of 2019. So yay.
Yeah, that's super exciting. You mentioned that this is your job now. So congratulations, man. You're like living the dream, right?
As terrifying as that is, yes. I liken it to that moment when, like, right before Wile E. Coyote looks down and, like, realizes there's no road. It's like, as long as I don't look down, we can make it. And then I kind of realize when that anxiety clears and I'm able to kind of like think about it, I'm like, yeah, I am living the dream. Like this is what I've wanted for a long time, to be able to say I do something creative, and that is enough to sustain a life with a family and all that. But it's also changed my relationship to this hobby that I've loved since I was like 10 years old, and has meant that like I can't look at it the same way anymore, and I can't approach my free time with it in the same way anymore. And that's been like the real struggle there, is like, all right, how do I make that transition from, you know, being a forum lurker and like an enthusiastic hobbyist and, you know, somebody who just plays this game a lot, to, you know, actually making videos that people want to watch, and videos that people keep coming back and watching and that are thought provoking. They don't fall into the typical YouTube habit of being like hyperbolic or really like, you know, aggressive. Like, I'm going to stake my flag in this particular, battle and, you know, call everybody else stupid. That they present a role-playing topic that you can think about, and maybe it inspires you even if you disagree with us. Because like the best blogs that I read, and all of the blogs online, that those ones that inspired me, despite the fact that there are a lot of them whose authors I'm like, I don't ever really want to meet you. I really like some of your ideas, but you seem like kind of a person that I might have trouble with in real life. And I don't, you know,
here on Hobbs and Friends, we call those douchers.
Gotcha. So I didn't want to become one of those channels, and I wanted it to be a place where it's like, yeah, we might not be running your D&D. We might not be playing your Dungeons and Dragons. My advice not be geared toward your specific table, but maybe there's something we talk about. Maybe you just want to hear us, you know, yammer on for 30 minutes about elves or the place of conjuration magic in your world, or how do you really summon a genie? That I think transcends editions and transcends play styles in a way, because anybody can be inspired by that and come away from watching that video with something for their gaming table that player DM, you know, it that's what I'm hoping for. And the amount of people I've had personally come up to me, tell me that that's what's happened to them, cuts through that anxiety of that Wile E. Coyote moment. And so that's why I love going to like conventions and stuff, because it's a nice refresher to move off YouTube and the comment section. And, you know, I'm there all the time, and, you know, you're not supposed to be there, but you got to be there.
Well, you know, that's perfect. That's actually a perfect transition, mm-hmm. right? Because that's how we met, is at Game Hole Con year, right?
I kind of loved Game Hole Con. It's my favorite one that I went to last year because of how small it was. But yeah.
Awesome. it's one of, it was, it's always one of my favorites. I love Alex. Mm-hmm. So, I love what he does and how he allows us to have our own little area there. That's kind of cut off and still very active. You guys were super busy there. I saw you all the time doing stuff. So you guys really took advantage of that. And, that was pretty cool.
We paid off the luggage fees for all those cameras. So we were going to get, as much as we can. And I tell people like, it's a weird thing because whenever I'm at a convention now, I have to tell people like, hey, you know, if Travis is about, you're going to be on camera. You know, is that okay? Are you, is everybody all right with that? We didn't, you know, it's a sort of a part of that mindset change, but, it's all grist for the mill. And, a lot of that ends up as like bloopers at the end of, videos or, you know, stuff that's sent back to the people who are in the video is like something for them, you know, to have for their fans or their audience or something. But every now and then you get a little gem that is just like, everybody's got to see this. So it's awesome, great. That's great. I love Game Awesome.
All right. Good. Me too. Let's get through this introduction and then we can get into the main topic and we can tell my viewers why in the heck you on here. All right. So let's do our weekly gaming briefly. I think you mentioned you had a Warhammer story. Did you want to go first? Or did you want me to?
Yeah. Well, mine story isn't very long. This is my second time ever getting to actually play Warhammer. I usually DM and I'm happy to do it, but I told the particular group I was with, this is on a Twitch stream where people can donate to influence the game and they can donate enemies and chaos surges that can affect your character and the like. So I was like, it's a challenge to me to kind of keep up with all that. Second game playing and I get stabbed in the heart and die instantly. my badass dark elf pirate, we're all playing dark elves, one shot, one kill, had to burn my one fate point just to survive, and it's going to take me like 4 weeks to recover from it in like a game that's only supposed to last like 3 or 4 sessions. We're just doing like quick, like brief mini games of Warhammer, and I just was like, there was a moment where I was like really mad, and then it lasted for like 5 or 6 seconds, and I was like, well, I didn't have to play Warhammer. Like, this is why you do it. And I was like, you know what, guys? My guy retires. Like, I'm serious. He takes this as a hint from the goddess of fate. I'll make a new character. It won't take that long. It's fine. So that was, I appreciate that Warhammer moment. Very fun. Very fun session.
Awesome. So what show was that on? What Twitch stream?
That's on Encounter RP. They have a Wednesday Warhammer show. I ran 2 seasons of it last year where I ran one game where they all played witch hunters and they were going after like chaos sorcerers and the like. And then the other one was like students in rebellion and Skaven in Middenheim was nice. The other one. So for the third one, I was like, I don't want to run. I just want to play. I don't want to have to think about it that much.
Is that fourth edition Warhammer? Is that what it is? Or
second edition?
Second. Okay,
this is nice. Second with a mix of some stuff from first edition in it. So,
yeah. All right, cool. Awesome. So I'll run some stuff down. I got into my session one of Castles and Crusades with my home group, the game Green River Gamers Association. The campaign is called The Red Road. And it was fun, considering last time when our session zero took place, it took 4 hours to make characters, which is ridiculous for a game like Castles and Crusades. It was we're used to playing like DX or something. And it's very simple and you roll your character and that's it. You're done, really. But there were so many options for them. And that's why we did it, is because one of the guys was more of a... he's used to playing like Pathfinder. He comes from that background. And so he wanted a lot of character options in the beginnings. And so they didn't want races class. And so this was the game I chose because none of us had ever played it before. So it was fun though.
It's supposed to be pretty fast. It's good. Yeah,
it's a cool game. And so I also, in the last couple of weeks here, I've played in 2 of Dungeon Musings live stream games. One is, Hyperborea game, a drop in drop out game, which was pretty fun. And another Delta Green, which I'd never played before. And it's like, he's really doing it like an audience participation, like a TV show, like True Detective is a good inspiration. And basically the audience is supposed to interact and help remind us of things that clues we might've missed. And then maybe discuss, you know, what the mystery is, like a Lost show or something like that. So, that was session one of that as well. And so those were pretty cool. And of course I ran some Kalmata games, my, BX West Marches game that I'm in over 100 sessions. So do you play BX very much or no?
I've done, yeah, not a lot. My OSR experience is more like white box original. I played, what was it? What's the Swords and Wizardry?
White Swords box and Wizardry edition. White box?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one that I've spent the most time with.
That's cool. Was that like the fantasy medieval adventure game version or the old Mythmere, or do you know?
I think it's the Mythmere version. I've got the box on my shelf, but yeah, it was awesome. The DM that I was playing with had reprints of the Little Brown Books. So we actually used those, but then I bought the Swords and Wizardry just because I was like, I love this game. I was like, I really like this version of the game so much. The DM was like, that was the closest one to it. So
yeah, I would say that's that's what the author would say, right? That was Uncle Matt's whole idea with that game. So that's what he runs at his table, I think, when he's not running fifth edition. So,
right.
Yeah,
that was great. Awesome. I really loved it. Yeah.
Great, man. All right. So here we come to the last bit, everything about you. Ooh. So I discussed it briefly with you. Do you want to go first? You want me to go?
You go first. So I get a feel for it.
All right. So today, this morning I ran my Kalmata live game. It's kind of the international game I run early on Sunday morning. So, some of the guys from England can play and it's not, you know, 2 a.m. for them. And, Colin Green from Spike Pick podcast was playing. And, the session was, it's always about, it's a 3 hour long session, but it was about 2.5 cause I had to do another podcast with, the Appendix N Book Club this morning. So, anyway, we did the whole session and there was no combat. And one of the guys, the caller for the game, was kind of disappointed. And he was like, oh, yeah, it was a boring game or whatever. And I'm like, I don't think so. You guys got treasure. Nobody died. I call it a success.
Yeah. I mean, they still went on a delve, right? Like they still did a... Right? Yeah,
they went exploring through the hex, through the jungle, and found some ruins. They went down and there was some foreshadowing of imminent... could be danger, and they bypassed it and still got away. And there also was like a patrol that they hid from goat men. So there was a lot of opportunities if they wanted to, but they actually took the more intelligent road, and because it's dangerous enough as it is, you know, that's the whole idea really. So,
right.
All right.
That sounds like a win. Yeah.
I think so. Your turn.
So I'm in that, aforementioned original D&D game, I got my magic user up to 7th level. And that's that's sort of like my wear that. If I had a badge, if there was like a Boy Scout badge for that, I would wear that to every convention and it would just be a shirt. He died 4 times, but that's all right. I paid the cost to bring him back and it was really great. So it was in terms of like my experience with the OSR, it was like the first time I was ever able to like dive in and play. And I was really lucky to find a DM who was really like, he was active on Dragon's Foot and some other places and was willing to like play a game with us whenever we wanted. And so I was flush with free time and between my undergrad and grad school, mostly, was able to play like twice a week. And I was very proud of this character because I took him into the dungeon by himself several times and survived every time, came out with a lot of treasure, was possessed by a chaos sword, tried to kill the party cleric, didn't kill him. We dealt with the chaos sword. I mean, this is sort of like all in the over many sessions, right? And then the cleric got kidnapped by some snake worshiping elves and we tried to rescue him, but by the third attempt, we kind of given up.
Sorry, buddy.
The player wasn't able to play as much either. So it's kind of like a serendipitous or perhaps causal. And, but by the time I left the group, there was like 13 players. And so you'd make a new character come in at level one. And it's tough being a 7th level, the player of a 7th level character, at, you know, as, or particularly a seventh level like magic user, right? Like I only have 22 hit points. So I was really, really proud of that and loved that like campaign. It like stands out really clearly as like a formative moment in D&D for me.
Awesome, man.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah. All right. So let's address the elephant in the room.
Oh,
so
yes.
This is not only an OSR podcast, but I'm really kind of at heart an OSR guy, and I probably always will be. But after meeting you at Game Hole and talking to you some and stopping by and seeing you, I watched, you know, some of your shows and I was really taken with the fundamental topics that you guys covered. You really, when you talked, you really seemed to me to come at fifth edition really from an old school way. Like a lot of the things you talk about are very similar to OSR theory fundamentally. And so I thought it was really awesome that you are approaching primarily fifth edition audience from a fundamentally OSR theoretical approach. And so I really wanted to have you on and talk to you. Was that by design? You know, was that a purposeful thing that you wanted to do? Or how did that aspect of web DM come about?
I mean, so I'm in charge of all our creative content, or at least the head of it, not in charge of all of it. Pruitt, my co-host, and then my wife, who is also our communications director. The three of us come up with show ideas and work through them. And we'll take, a lot of times we'll take viewer topics and give them our own spin. But before WebDM, I was the primary dungeon master for our group for, I don't know, 20 something years. It was a lot. I mean, we were able to play for at least 12 of those on a weekly basis, the same five people of us. And I would scour the internet for advice. And I found that OSR blogs mostly were filled with practical, useful advice and also so much inspirational material. Like for the, it seemed like every blog out there had their own world that they were building in between, posts about theory or, like a 12-part series on how you're going to dive into encounters and, really run a hex crawl or something. And I had a lot of free time and I just ate it up, would read like 30 or 40 of them a week if I could, could, and would just like blend all those ideas into my campaign. And so when we started WebDM, I was just soaked in all of this. It started with Grognardia, but ballooned out from there to Hack and Slash blog from Courtney Campbell. And I'm sure I don't need to discuss all these to your listeners, but if it's in the top,
I find it interesting to know which ones. I was going to ask you which ones were your top ones. So you already mentioned two. That's awesome, James Malashevsky. So
D&D with Born Stars would be another one. Zach's blog, big one for me.
Yeah, did you talk to James at Game Hole?
I did not. Was he there?
Oh. Yeah, he was hanging around in my booth almost the whole time.
I would not have recognized him, but I should have. I'm sorry, I didn't. But I didn't get a chance to talk to him.
He's going to come to Game Hole this year. I'll introduce you.
I'm definitely going
to
be at Game Hole again this year. Yeah, because this would, even if it's just me. Even if it's just me, I'll be there. So anyway, that'd be great. Zach's blog, and then, gosh, there were a lot of others that are defunct now. Like if you visit them, I want to say, Noism's blog. I always forget it. The name of his, the Yunsun is how I remember him. Mostly I remember him by their campaign settings. but it's blogs like those, those are the ones off the top of my head. And I loved reading them. And it felt like the people who were writing these posts were running games that I would aspire. Like I want to aspire to that. Like I want your description that you just posted on your blog of how you ran this game. I want my players to say similar things about that. And so I'd take it all, but my players didn't really like the OSR's game that I ran for them. I think I ran them through Labyrinth Lord, which actually now I think that would be BX. They liked it. They got to about fourth or fifth level with their characters. Some of them died. A lot of henchmen died. So many henchmen. I had a lot of fun making a mega dungeon and populating it and running it from week to week. And the campaign grew and was starting to like venture beyond the town to dungeon corridor really organically. But I was loving it. And my players were not feeling it. And they'd opted instead to play Warhammer second edition. And so I ran The Enemy Within and Warhammer. And that was kind of I stopped really paying as much attention to VOSR then. And it wasn't until I started up in WebDM and I was like, wow, I'm giving Dungeon Master advice. Let me refresh myself on some of the, what's out there in the blog world. And, that's where I found that a lot of the blogs that I liked had stopped being updated. There were new ones. Coins and Scrolls, I guess, would be another one that I really love. I found that one through mm-hmm. How to Eat a Monster. I was like, how many calories is a monster? I don't know what it was. I was like, someone in my game was like, I'm about to eat this thing. And I was like, it seems like a big meal. Like, give me a second. That's how I found Coins and Scrolls. And so I don't know what it is about the OSR DIY mindset and the people out there who are creating stuff for it, but it just like sets my brain on fire. And then I'm happy to take that, blend it with my own experience as a dungeon master and present it to a YouTube audience that is, if they're coming into fifth edition new, they might have all this pressure on them to be a certain kind of dungeon master, to have deliver a certain kind of experience for their players. A lot of people are coming in because of a stream that they saw or something. And it's very performative and it's a certain type of game. And we're here to basically tell them, like, number one, you can relax about all that shit. Number two, it's okay to mess up, to fail, to have messy edges. You can smooth all that out and you don't even need to put it all on yourself anyway. This is kind of the group's job to make this thing sing. You know, you guys are here as a group playing this game, so you can put some of this on the players and talk about the game you want to play and run instead of just like show up with an agenda that you don't tell anyone about and then be an asshole when you start butting heads with each other. Which a lot of our advice is basically just like, hey, if you guys talked about this instead of, you know, pulling some kind of weird power play, you might solve this and everybody could play the game.
The secret of being social is, you know, conversation, right? Communicate with each other. Yeah.
I like the OSR because it continues to inspire me. Like I just was able to pick up Hot Springs Island. I had the PDFs for a while, but I'm an analog kind of person. I need to feel it and see it and touch it. And I just was looking through it and I'm like, I don't know really what this is yet, but just flipping through it, I'm like, I have to run this. And it was the same way when I picked up, say, Maze of the Blue Medusa, and within 2 or 3 seconds of flipping through it, I was like, all right, I got to text my friends. We're playing this like tomorrow. And that game lasted like 6 months of near weekly play. And it required me to just like sit down and flip through a book and read it. And then, you know, I don't know what it is about inspirational content combined with ease of use that the OSR community has seemed to hit on, but I'm sometimes flabbergasted that they seem to be the only ones doing it. And I'm happy to keep coming back to them because like, I love the stuff. Yeah, it's great.
That's awesome. Those are obviously any mm-hmm. award and Three Castle award winning products. So, I mean, I'm not surprised that you're into those. That's awesome. What did you use fifth edition when you ran those?
Yeah, I used fifth edition when I ran Maze of the Blue Medusa, and it changes it, right? Like I had characters that had access to flight, persistent flight at a fairly low level. And if you're mm-hmm. familiar with the maze, a lot of the traps are designed like how you walk on the floor, but not everybody has flight. You know, it's just like one party member. So I'm happy to let them get in trouble ahead of the party while they fly through all these trapped rooms that the rest of the group has to navigate. Like it changes how you approach it. And I had to, you know, beef up some of the monsters from what the suggestions were in the book, just because my characters are power gamers as well, or my players are power gamers. So they love to make like unkillable damage machines. And I'm used to reskinning monsters and boosting them and doubling their hit points. And it's, you know, no big deal.
Yeah. The language that you use on the show reminds me of, you know, like MMO language, like, you know, damage per second or things like that, the terminology that you use. So I'm always really interested to hear this mashup of MMO, fifth edition, OSR stuff all wrapped up into one. So you kind of just vaguely outlined, some of the things you had to do. Mm-hmm. You talk about getting into a different mindset to change OSR stuff into fifth edition. Like, do you have a specific process that you use? Do you just kind of like, do you take a lot of prep time ahead of time, or do you just kind of wing it when you do it and then just, or how, what do you go through in those steps when you're doing that?
I tend to take like a hit die to CR as an approximate. So I'll look at like whatever the hit die of, an OSR monster is, and then see if it's, first off, see if there's not a one-to-one correlation, right? Like a lot of this is Dungeons and Dragons. And so like a mind flayer has always been a mind flayer, and they worked differently back then, but maybe not now. For like unique monsters, I try to like, okay, how many hit die is this in like an old school game? I might double it or triple it for a fifth edition game. But a lot of it, I'm a lazy dungeon master at heart, and I'll reskin monsters all day long. I use mind flayers for the orchid men in Maze of the Blue Medusa, because the orchid men seem like they sort of perfume you, and then you stick your head in this bulb of acid that eats you. And I was like, it's kind of like a mind flayer, right? And my players were terrified of them. I threw 30 of them at them, and they killed like two and then ran. And it was only distance that kept them from being eaten or their brains melted. But it's also fifth edition, right? If you're coming from a primarily old school game, fifth edition characters are tough as shit. They are very difficult to kill. You have to go out of your way to permanently take one down. And that's by design. You need to change the game for it. So it's a different game, but you can play it from an attitude of the same position that like OSR games are played from, all the good stuff from like the quick primer of old school game on old school gaming, and all of the best practices that you'd see on the different blogs, and the game runs fine. In fact, it sings. It does that kind of game very well, because sometimes the players are going to curb stomp a monster because you're doing like a random type encounters, building every one of them from scratch to challenge the party. But that inconsistency can be fun, and just like the relaxed attitude towards the mechanics of the game, I think is an asset that fifth edition has, as opposed to say, so, like third or fourth edition.
Right. That you do have to balance everything. Oh, yeah. That's what I was leaning towards. Mm-hmm. So do you keep that unbalanced feel? Like if you were going to run, Swordfish Isles by Jacob first, are you going to keep that, or are you going to let them fall into things that they're obviously going to have to run from? You said that they ran from the Mind Flayers and Maze of the Blue Medusa. Mm-hmm. Is that a common thing in those sorts of games, or? And I mean, like, how do you feel compared to like, do you run like Tomb of Annihilation? Did you run that as well? And then if you come back and compare that to another jungle island exploration game, which would be Swordfish Islands, what do you think about those two, and do you mix them together, or like what kind of process would you go in running that and for a campaign in fifth edition?
For fifth edition, my first question is like, how high level are the PCs? Because if they're less than fifth level, the game will still deliver a plenty deadly experience. Especially, you can make little tweaks to monsters, like if this attack ever brings you to zero, it kills you outright. No death saves for you. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of low level monsters that they're quite vicious in that regard. And I think like first through fourth level fifth edition plays very similarly to the way first through second or third edition plays in a lot of older editions. It's still plenty deadly. And so I probably would run it like that. I'd probably just say you guys are first level and then be very slow with advancement as they, search the island. I'd run Hot Springs Island over Tomb of Annihilation, the adventure, any day of the week. mostly because it seems like a more manageable chunk of GM prep. And I guess I don't know. I feel like I'm way off a tangent from your original question, but I think it's about. You can approach it by like mechanically, right? Like I've got to make tweaks to the game to change a certain outcome. Cause I don't want it to be, as non-lethal, say. But you can also just, the game is plenty lethal at lower levels, and you can do plenty epic stuff with it. They can fight, pretty high level monsters, even at low level in fifth edition. So that'd be where I start. And then from there, I might make a few changes, but probably not a lot. I mostly just like to let it just, let the play happen. And if something needs to change, we'll fix it as we play instead of doing a lot of prep beforehand.
Yeah, which is really kind of a OSR approach to running fifth edition, really. So that's awesome, man. So thanks for that. So I have a question for you. You kind of seem outside. It doesn't seem like you maybe hang out with any of these people other than reading their blogs. But from your vantage point, what do you think of the concept of the OSR and being a toxic community? Have you felt that yourself, or have you been any? Do you agree with that, or what? Do you have any thoughts on it?
I have not felt it personally. I've witnessed witnessed some of it. And there's the usual suspects that come in and, like to stir the pot and be incendiary and then claim to be sort of like persecuted. And I don't want, necessarily to have any part of that. That's part of why I don't engage with the OSR as much. And we get a lot of feedback from our fans that when we say specifically mention it, that their perception of it is that it's toxic. And so what we try to do when we do talk about the OSR, and we have for our patrons, at least have a podcast where we've covered it several times, and is to be like, listen, it's not all like that. This represents a portion of this hobby of many people of which are completely non-toxic and would be, you should follow their stuff, read their blogs, buy their books. And we try to promote those people. We try to call them out and to let our audience know, these are the people that we follow because we both like their stuff and we don't think they contribute to this toxicity. But it is something I notice, and it's something the rest of the WebDM team notices, even though they're not plugged into this portion of D&D. And it's something our fans have noticed. So it's on my mind a lot. And there are times when I'm self-conscious about it because I really do love the OSR. I love the games that have come out of it. I love the, a lot of the bloggers that have influenced me. Meeting them would be like a reverse situation of what I often find myself in. But I'm cognizant and sort of mindful of the fact that a lot of the people that are around me don't see it the same way. And it's difficult sometimes to sort of tread that line, other than to say, listen, it's not as black and white as that. And here are the parts of the hobby that, are great. We should check them out. I kind of think the split from OSR to DIY might be a good direction in that regard, just because of a change of name even.
Yeah, well, I'm not Hobbs and Friends of the OSR anymore.
Right, brand. I feel you.
But I agree with you. That hasn't been my experience. And like you say, there are some loud people that do cause that. And it's unfortunate that everyone just believes that everyone is like that because of that. And I really, your answer was very well said and thoughtful. Oh, thank you. So thanks for that.
Thank you.
All right. So we're running out of time, Jim. It's gone really fast, hasn't it?
I know.
let me do some shout outs for my own patrons.
Sure.
So I wanted to thank, I don't think this is who I plan on putting here. Oh, well, they're going to get another one. Alan Rutledge, Isaac Eccles, and Gordon Cranford. Thank you so much for being patrons of Hobbs and Friends. I appreciate it. I'm not flying around in my private jet like Jim Davis is from his WebDM people. But, oh,
yeah, the Gilded Jet. that YouTube catch.
I really appreciate you guys. I'm going to do another one. VA, thanks for reaching out to me on MeWe, no less. And thanks for being a patron. And I hope you get into a Kalmata game soon. You want to pimp your patron real quick?
Yeah, sure. So if you like what we do on our YouTube channel, Pruitt and I have a weekly podcast that we release to our patrons of WebDM, Patreon/WebDM, I guess. And we also have a Twitch channel where if you're sort of want to see us put our money where our mouth is, I run a Gonzo post-apocalyptic science fantasy game and just twist fifth edition at all kind of grotesque knots. So if you want to see what, you know, what it's like to try to break an edition or something, maybe check us out there. Mostly it's just the main YouTube channel, WebDM, where we upload videos every Wednesday. And even if fifth edition isn't your thing, I bet there's something there for you, because we aim to just inspire you about Dungeons and Dragons and gaming in general. And, you know, we can keep the additions to some other conversation.
And there is something, because I watch it and I've been gaming for 40 years. And I always find every episode something that I find interesting and inspiring. It makes me want to play some D&D. So that's really awesome. Thanks. If you want to become a patron of Hobbs and Friends, it's patreon.com/OSRN Hobbs. You can find me on almost every social media, G+, MeWe, Facebook are all Hobbs and Friends with the OSR, Twitter at OSR and Hobbs, or my personal Twitter feed at Hobbs Indeed. And where everyone kind of hangs out and gets to meet all the podcast people I hang out with, like the OSR Anchorites at the Audio Dungeon Discord. If someone wanted to tweet you, how would they get a hold of you on Twitter?
So you can tweet me at The Real Jim Davis, and I'm happy to talk about D&D related topics. And like, if you're looking for WebDM, that it's at WebDM Show. One of our team, most likely Emma, will get back to you about that. But those are my two places on Twitter. That's really the only social media I'm active on. But I think we have an Instagram. I don't know. Maybe there's stuff there. Nice. And that would be at WebDM Show.
I forgot about Insta. Oh, yeah. I got my personal Instagram.
So too, many man. Social nice. Medias.
I know. Got to catch them all.
Oh, yeah.
That's horrible. All right. If you want to send me an email and talk to me about Jim or any other guests on Hobbs and Friends, I am at Hobbs. Where am I at, Jim? Do you know? No. Hobbs at HobbsandFriends.com. That was a tough one, wasn't it? All right. So you got any last words before we sign off?
I don't. It was a pleasure to chat, and it was over too quickly.
It went really fast, man. You were a great guest.
Thank you
so much for being on. And I'll be looking forward to seeing it at Game Hole, and maybe we can stay in touch.
That'd be great.
I'm really interested in this Twitch game that you're talking about, man. That sounds totally appendix.
I'm telling you, it's very Vancey and deliberately so. Very John Carter of Mars. I love it. It's everything I love about Appendix N, except without elves and dwarves and halflings and stuff. It's all orcs and goblins. It's great. It's great.
Nice, man. All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed this little trip down Mr. Hobbs's gamerhood. Won't you be my gamer? That's such a dumb tagline.